boy.
Shabby Road Records Show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Shabby Road Records Show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Oh no! Way to go, Liz. You like the good one.
These are always chosen at random, and there they are again.
Completely random. Our favorites and yours, Black Oak, Arkansas, from the Raunch and Roll album. Raunch and Roll Live, what, 1973? And this is...
Getting kind of cocky,
right?
Yeah, getting kind of cocky?
Yeah,
God.
And he rhymes it with jockey.
Rocky. Have we now heard every song on this record, on the Shabby Road Record Show?
Did we play... We played the intro, the Jim Dandy intro to Up, which is would complete... If we haven't played any of the song part of that, that would be all of side two.
Jeez.
We're getting there. And my God...
My promise to you, listener, is that we will, in 2016, hear the rest of Raunch and Roll.
Yeah. My promise to you, if you vote for me. But yeah, man, I don't see any reason why every song on this album shouldn't be played at one point in time or another.
Well, we're almost there. We might as well finish it off.
Too late to do another side booms because we played most of it anyway, so it would be a bit too redundant, so...
Ah, great record, though.
Fucking fantastic.
Listen to him back there. Well, shall we just get cracking?
Let's do that. I was going to bust into some Jim Dandy, but that's just too expected, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little predictable
right?
at this point.
Not going to happen.
It's a little on the nose.
Yes, it is. Oops.
Don't say that. Well, hey, Laba.
Hey, Laba.
The two mystery boxes are... lathered up and fattened up with some classic vinyl, so we are ready to launch another episode of the Shabby Road Record Show. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and spread out the oil, the gasoline. My co-host walks smooth, riding in a mean, mean machine, A.D. Adams.
Well, man, that just, I tell you, that's a hell of an intro. Makes me hungry, Ryan. And I'm thinking of all the bands, today I was thinking of all the bands that... that, like, have food in their name. You'd be amazed how many food name bands. So I was thinking of a great meal, like meatloaf with raspberries and corn on the side.
All right,
with Limp Bizkit smothered in cream, right?
Gotcha, yeah.
And it would probably go with a nice April wine, wouldn't it?
Ooh, to wash it all down.
Right, yeah. So anyway, I actually sat down and wrote that today. I guess I need a life. But good to be here, regardless.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for joining us here on episode 67. Can't believe it's been this many.
Seven.
Good Lord.
Haven't they shut us down yet?
No, not yet. Somebody's bound to. Hey, AD, you know what? We cracked the top 100 and what's hot on iTunes last week.
We did?
Yes, we did. Congratulations, my friend.
Look at us go.
Yeah. Whoa.
Go, sluggers, go.
For one hot minute, we were one of the 100 hottest things on iTunes, and we owe it all to you guys for sharing and leaving those iTunes reviews, and if you haven't done so yet, please do so, and it'll keep us in that hot 100 on iTunes, and it really helps, you know, get the word out of Shabby Road. So thank you times a million for that.
Anything I've ever been a part of has never been, you know, considered hot. So that's kind of cool, except for my films in the 70s.
Yeah, of course,
here.
The films, yes. Well.
But repulsive is more the term.
Well, let's say hello to our fearless leader, Ricky Serrano, running the controls.
Hello, world.
How's it going? How's that mic sound to you? It's good. Know. Okay, not bad. Yeah. Saying it in there. And he's brought with him the cantankerous old sod, Hal 5000.
You've got nothing! Nothing!
I've got a Hot 100 podcast, Hal, so take that.
You've got nothing! Nothing!
That's right, podcast. Yeah, it's like
he doesn't care.
Still got nothing.
He cares nothing.
And over on the Astro Band bench seat by Ricky is JD. Jimmy Durden's back in the house. Diddling away on his iPad.
Shopping for tubes.
He's shopping for vacuum tubes.
Oh.
Yeah. for his guitar amp or for his vacuum cleaner. We're not sure.
Yes.
Or his old console television.
The old Philco.
Yes. Who do you got on your Astrovan bench seat?
Well, sitting over on this side of the room, the proper side of the room, is our luscious Liz, our mixologist, liquid mistress, Liz Morgan's here.
All right.
Lushing us up. Lubing and lathering us, speaking of.
She's doing better. I know that she's been having some physical ailments and falling apart at the seams, not unlike Simon on Airplane 2. And Simon has turned to Jell-O.
Liquor and pills, though, right? Isn't that the... Yeah, she's got the right idea, right?
I love that drop. Can't get enough of that
one. Come on.
So, you got any? We should start cracking these open. How's your mystery box looking?
Dude, mine is so eclectic. Mine goes from, like jolly old England up to upstate New York, down to the heart of Dixie, up through tropical sunny Canada. So, my shit is all over the map. I brought a barn. My first selection is a barn-burning jawbreaker. I'm telling you, this one's going to leave you on the carpet fleabing for your teeth. This is so big ass. This is, we're starting off with a bing, a bang, and a boom. Then I've got a very heavy, dirgy collaboration of two Canadian superstar bands, two superstars collaborating on the same.
You're talking about. Hey.
Well, we'll explain that in about maybe an hour. How?
Excellent.
Or maybe boot a half an hour. And then my third selection, Ryan, I'm telling you, you brought in some great, great stuff. A contender for Song of the Year, what, 2-3 weeks ago, I do believe.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what it was. But
I think it was that new band, that pop record.
The Red Button?
Red Button, yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was a contender.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So I'm telling you, this might be the best song that has ever been played, both seasons. On the Shabby Road Record Show, I brought in, simply put, I brought the saddest, most heartbreaking, gut-wrenching, I'm talking gut-wrenching anguish on this song. If this
sounds
song,
fun.
Dude, yeah. If this, I saved it for last, too.
Oh, good. We'll be crying in our beers by then.
Dude, if this song doesn't have you blubbering like a big pile of crybaby goo, then you have no soul, you hateful, heartless misanthrope.
Oh, wow.
This one rocks, dude. This
Put
is
down
so bad.
The thesaurus.
This one is so fucking. I'm telling you, I'm so excited to play this song.
You should have been banging your thesaurus on the desk, like, you misanthrope.
No, actually, I knew that word. That's an old, Herpy Boyles tune.
Oh, okay. I'll take your word for it.
I'll explain that on a different episode.
So, my mystery box is. It's something I've visited before.
Okay.
All the bands in the box are from the UK. They are English bands. Jolly old England. So all three bands are from the UK. And I believe that's all 70s. Early 70s, too. Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, all about 73.
I got me 60s. Once, well, 70s, you know what? 80s here.
Take that back. It's a 70s band, but it's 69. So very early.
Sort of like Led Zeppelin, how they, Sabbath was considered a 70s band,
right.
But they.
It's
started.
Neither one of those bands, but yeah, in the same vein.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
The reason why I decided to do that is because I was looking at our numbers, after the iTunes Hot 100 thing came down.
Oh, we were on the Hot 100?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. We can just keep saying
I'm
that over
keep asking you. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the last podcast we shall ever do.
No, we're going to retire on top, right? Yeah,
go out on top. We were there for like 5 minutes. And
yeah, and we were on the bottom of the top.
And then it was back to the other 99 electronica podcasts that usually inhabit that list. But I looked at our numbers and, United States is obviously our biggest downloading area. Followed by number two is...
Canada.
No,
right?
Australia.
Australia. That's right. They took it a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah, they took it back about a month ago from Canada, who is number three.
They just don't want it. You can have it.
You can have it.
You can have it. Australia. Way to go.
Now, of course, the UK used to be number four, but it has been taken over by Sweden.
Well, yay.
That's kind of cool, but
Talk. That means thank you in Swedish.
Oh, I like this. No wonder they like our podcast so much.
Skål, tamme fan.
Yeah. So the United Kingdom, we're making a plea, or at least I am in my mystery box, for you to come back to Shabby Road and get back up there where you belong, next to Canada and Australia. And really, we love, you know, the UK, the English music so much. And I can only guess that it's our horrible accents that we go into at least four times a show. But please,
right,
just,
it's going to stop right now, isn't it?
But please take it in the spirit in which it's intended.
Yeah,
I mean, just come on back
come
to Shabby
on, we
Road.
We do Jim Dandy accents.
True. Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And
we
did
fun of everybody.
Tex Dickerson accents on that one show.
That was damn good. Yeah, we got some mail on that one. G-Man wrote about that. Good.
So I guess we're nothing left to do except for pick to see who goes first. And Ricky Serrano back there has got two playing cards as per usual. And if you've listened to the show, you know the drill. But if you haven't, he's got a red and a black and is behind his back. 80s red on black. And JD, who's our special guest here tonight, shopping for tubes on the internet. We'll pick left or right hand.
Yeah, you're going to pick right.
Oh, it's me. Sorry, we don't have your barn burner to start with.
Now that's okay.
That's unfortunate. All right, well, we're going to crack. We're going to go and hop a Learjet over to merry old England here. And the first one I'm going to play is a song that topped the UK charts. It's a number one hit in the UK.
Okay,
don't
right.
believe it charted here in the U.S.
Of course not, if it was really, really good.
Exactly. See, that's one reason why the UK listeners should like us,
right?
Because we understand how the tastes in America are so bland and terrible.
We're totally
most of the time.
On Team London here. Come on.
It topped the UK charts in 1973. It knocked off Can the Can by Susie Quattro.
That's right.
Was a number one record in the UK. And it was only there for 1 week, and it was kicked off by Slade's Squeeze Me, Please Me.
It was probably another Slade song, right?
No, it's not Slade. It's a song that it's a new band to Shabby Road, and it's 10cc, and we're going to hear Rubber Bullets.
Oh, wow.
Check that out. There
Boy,
you go.
Boy, that came out of I did not expect that at all, man.
This is a cool band. I've had this record for a little bit of time, and, you know, it's actually quite good. It's taken me a while to sort of warm up to it, but I like it a lot. Do you know much about them?
I've never owned the album. A friend of mine had it, played it a lot.
Okay, so you're kind of familiar with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the song, Rubber Bullets, is an homage to Jailhouse Rock. It's about a party raging in a local county jail, and they got a band there. They got booze there. They're having a tear gas of a time. That's what they say in the lyrics.
Excellent.
And then the cops come in to break it up with a hail of rubber bullets. And it's sort of a, you know, it's a rock and roller, but it's a rock and roller in its sense, like almost a Chuck Berry kind of thing, you know. But the chorus, if you recall, if you're familiar with the song, the chorus is more of a straight up rock, mm-hmm. rock chorus, you know. And then the middle section is a total, very cool breakdown. Where, you know, it's, I believe lyrically, it's the organizers, the cops trying to go in there and find out what to do. And I think, they send in the priest to talk some sense into the rioting prisoners.
Oh, is that
in the middle section?
Is that what
happens?
Cool. Now, 10cc, obviously, one of those American one-hit wonders, because the only thing when you say 10cc, where are you going to go?
Oh, what is
I'm
their song?
I'm not in love.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I keep your picture.
Yeah, that was their big hit.
On the wall.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 na, na, na. Whatever the fuck he says.
Now, since we started, let's talk about how 10cc gets their start. They actually started doing bubblegum music in the early 1970s with Kazmetz and Katz under Buddha Records. Remember that?
Yeah, those same guys, right?
Neil Bogart, Buddha Records, bubblegum music, and Kazmetz and Katz are the two producers of a lot of bubblegum
bands.
Ohio
Express,
yep.
Freaking 1910 Fruit Gum Company.
And the list goes on.
Yeah, the Archies even, I think. Didn't they do the Archies with that? That was a couple different guys.
Yeah, I think the Archies were, but those first two bands, sure, I know I saw them on the list. And one of the 10cc guys named Eric Stewart built a recording studio around the same time. And another 10cc-er named Graham Gouldman was the one who wrote songs for Kazmetz and Katz. So the two of them, they're friends, Gouldman and Eric Stewart, who has a studio. And I got a buddy who's got a studio. I got songs. And so we can record your stuff, you know, for cheap over in London. Because remember, Kazmetz and Katz are based out of New York.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So one of the songs was Sausalito by Ohio Express that Gouldman wrote and sang. He sang on it, although it was credited to Ohio Express. All four members of 10cc are performing on the track, the other two being Kevin Godley and Lal Cream. So Godley and Cream, you may know him by.
Oh, yeah, that's right. LOL is his name, right? Laugh Out Loud?
Laugh Out Loud Cream, yeah. Yes. And this saved Booty.
Yeah, wood.
Ooh, Buddha.
That's awesome. That's worth it.
Yeah, this saved Buddha a lot of money and also infused a lot of money into the studio that Eric Stewart owned. So it wasn't long before they were adding gear and getting busy producing other artists until finally, in 72, they get together under their own name and submitted a demo to Apple Records, who rejected it. They said, no, it's not our thing. And they had this doo-wop song that was sort of more of like a Frank Zappa doo-wop, if you think of the early Mothers of Invention.
Almost overdone.
Right.
Raucous, a little bit.
They even did the female vocal
right.
by speeding up the tape type of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And this song's called Donna, and that caught the attention of a popular producer named Jonathan King, who fell down laughing when he heard it and got the band signed. He's like falling down laughing. This is a smash. It's a smash hit, man.
So you go into a record guy's office, and he falls down laughing listening to your demo. Do you look at each other and go, is it good? Do you think he's going to sign us?
I know.
Or is he about to get security and throw our asses out of here?
You know? Exactly, yeah. It must have been at least a minute or two of going,
awkward,
should we
yeah.
leave?
When he gets off the floor, we got to make a decision here.
Great. I love this stuff. And he probably was aware of their bubblegum history and
right.
stuff like that, but who knows? So the band gets signed, and Jonathan King decides, oh, you guys need to change your name. So they were going by a couple of different names and not really settled on anything, I guess. And so they decided to go with 10cc. And Jonathan King says, 10cc, I had a dream that I saw a marquee at the Hammersmith Odeon, and it said, 10cc is the greatest band in the world. And the guys in 10cc said, no, that's not really what happened. What 10cc is, do you know what it is? This is embarrassing to say. It's taking the show to a whole new low. The name 10cc.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me guess, and I don't know. Let me guess.
Okay. It sounds
the
like
10
somebody...
looks like a penis.
True.
The one for the 10. So it's how much jizz comes out like yeah. on a regular
I was
sort
gonna
of an average spooge.
I was going to use a little bit more tact in saying it, but yes, that is correct. It is if a guy was stranded on a desert island after a nuclear holocaust and he had a guy and a girl, he would repopulate the earth 10 cc's at a time.
That's very well said.
That's how I was going to say it.
Yeah, well.
And so that's what – now, also to of note, 10 cc is at the higher end of the spectrum.
Yes. Thank you.
To show their prowess, their musical prowess.
If you've seen any of my films, you'd realize I'm well aware of that fact, Ryan.
Oh, no.
Come on.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Whew, okay. I think 10cc is the amount of urine that comes out of you now with your prostate being the way it is.
A drip and I'm done. Yeah. Five cc's at a time. I think I'm done.
So Jonathan King comes up with that name and it's not that dream. Of course, what's he going to say when the press and people ask him? He can't say what it actually is. He's
right.
going to use some sort of grandiose story, I'm sure. But he's no stranger to doing this sort of thing, discovering a band and changing their name and making them famous. He did that with Genesis. He did that with Bay City Rollers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Same cat, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. In the 2000s, though, Jonathan did some time for doing what Jared from Subway did.
Eight lean subs?
No. No, that's perfectly legal.
Oh.
The illegal activity that Jared has been up to.
Now, let me put this gently. How do I...
Oh, no. Yeah. I hope you could do it a little more gently than other part.
I really can't, so I won't. But yeah, wow.
Yeah, same as the drummer from Trapeze and Judas Priest. Mm-mm. Yeah, that guy. Mm-mm. So anyway, so going back up to the song, we're going to hear Rubber Bullets. And the song caused quite a lot of controversy when it came out because
Wow. Shut up, idiot.
I know.
It's amazing. This is your segment, too. I know. I'm loving this.
Because at the time of the release of the song, the British Army was using rubber bullets to quiet the fighting in Northern Ireland. The BBC didn't ban the song, but limited how many times it was played. So the idea of rubber bullets was widely known in the UK for being what the British soldiers are using to quell the fighting in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you know, it's just – I mean, if that's what they were using, that's what they were using. At least they're not talking about, you know, the cops came in and just shooting everybody bloody dead, you know. So it's kind of – I guess if they wanted to make a political stretch out of that, they could, you know.
Even though the song has nothing to do with any of that stuff, it was
– Right, actually,
to tell the truth, it's inspired by the prison riots at Attica. Which was Attica, 80s, got his hand in the air.
Yeah, fist in the
3 days in September of 1971, 1,000 of the Attica prison's approximately 2,200 inmates rioted and seized control of the prison, taking 42 staff hostage.
Mm-hmm. That was a mess back then. That was a big deal.
And they were demanding better treatment and prisoners' rights and things like that. And they used tear gas, which is in the song. You hear him having a tear gas of a time.
Yeah.
And the National Guard members came in to gain control of the situation as well. So you had the local police and the National Guard. Now, the local police and the National Guard are also cited in this song by 10cc. 10 of the hostages were killed and 29 of the inmates were killed by a hail of gunfire from the police and the National Guard. So they were not using rubber bullets. They were using real bullets.
Yeah.
Which is... So, yeah, interesting. And so that's a brief story of Attica. But 10cc's take on it's a little more upbeat and happy. They were just partying.
Rubber bullets sounds nicer.
It's a little bit better than a hail of gunfire mowing down all the partygoers in the jail.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 10cc, this is their first album, came out July of 1973 on UK Records. I believe that was spearheaded by the aforementioned Jonathan King. And it's a... side two, track two, if I'm not mistaken, AD. And it's Rubber Bullets. Oh, and yeah, you're looking at the picture.
The picture's on the back, like sullen guy, sullen guy, sullen guy. Dude who just like, hey, everybody, hi. He's
I know.
Just happy that
And
guy.
That is a toothy grin, isn't
that
it?
That is a big toothy grin.
That is nothing short of Osmond.
Yeah, it's great. You know, it's
look at that guy.
Three sultry rock dudes and the happiest guy on earth right there.
Yeah,
cool.
I'm in 10cc.
Check it out. Look at us. We're on an album.
All right, go ahead and drop that needle AD. Rubber Bullets, 10cc. Check it out.
I went to a party at the Lone Asian Pakistani talking with a bullhorn in his hands. He was cool, he was clear, he was always in command.
Always in command, always in command.
He said, blood will flow. Here, Padre, Padre, you talk to your boys. Trust in me.
Wow. Yeah, 10cc Rubber Bullets from their self-titled debut record in July of 73. You know, they had nothing but unlimited studio time because the guitar player owned the studio. So that's where you get the pitched up guitar and the guitar solo there, which was the tape was slowed down.
Yep.
You play the guitar solo, you put it back to the regular pitch of the tape, and it sounds like it's,
plays it
Alvin and the Chipmunks on guitar, you know?
Freaking cool. I haven't heard that in years, dude. That was cool. Oh, it had to have been late junior high the last time I heard that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I played you a song that you haven't heard since junior high.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You
lit me up. I mean, you saw my mood just like,
you had your headphones on and you were just like, I haven't heard this.
That's fucking cool. Good call, man.
That's a fun song and a great record on there. Fresh Air for Mama is the last track on there. That's one I was going to play as well, but I'm like, Rubber Bullets is more fun.
Well, maybe it'll make an appearance in my mystery box.
Yeah, because we've got all the rest of Godly and Cream stuff to talk about, too. So, we'll get to that at a later date. But check that record out. It's really good. What do you got, AD?
Well, all right, Ryan. There are many truths in rock.
Oh, God.
For one of them, Kiss isn't Kiss without Ace. That's just a truth. Another truth, the New York Dolls only made two records. That's a truth. Yep.
Yes.
And Golden Earring recorded actually more than one song. That's a truth.
Okay, yes.
Okay, that's a truth.
Diamond Rio looked terrible on their album cover.
That's a rock and roll truth. There are many truths in rock. These are some of them.
Undeniable
truths of rock. So you could say for the most part, as successful as this band that I'm going to play, as successful as their career was over the grand scheme of things, that they're recognized primarily by their big hit, and they had many. See, the thing is, Golden Earring had, up until Twilight Zone, that was remembered for, it was Radar Love. Boom, that was it, you know? Although primarily the other hit. They were huge in Europe, but in America, it was just that when you say Radar Love, you say Golden Earring. When you say Golden Earring, you immediately say Radar Love. It's just
I say White Lion.
Yeah, I bet you do. I hope you don't.
Thank you.
And I beg you not to. I suppose that's normal. But in the case of this band that I'm going to play, they've done so much. So many more songs and albums that really, really, really did well throughout a very, very successful career. Yet, when you say their name, you're going to go immediately to one song. Let's do a little word association thing here. I'll say either a band or a song, and you say the first, answer, which the band answer back, like band or song, that comes to mind. So, for instance, if I said Focus.
Hocus Pocus.
Absolutely.
By Focus.
How automatic is that, right?
I didn't even burn a calorie.
Right. Okay. You could even go Barry Manilow.
Mandy.
Boom. Okay. Edgar Winter.
Frankenstein.
Boom. Okay. Right?
Okay.
We're on a roll here.
Doing good.
Now, you could say Frankenstein or Edgar Winter was a one-hit wonder with Frankenstein. Right. Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. What if I even got broader and somebody with a bigger career said, and I'll quickly, okay?
Okay.
Chuck Berry.
Johnny B. Goode.
Boom, right? Okay.
We need a ding.
Right? So what I'm going to do
is... Come on, Hal. You're slipping, man.
That quick response. So far, we're hitting 100 here, batting 1,000.
All right.
So quickly, Fog Hat.
Slow Ride.
Boom. Right.
Ding, 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 ding.
So I brought...
Way to go.
I I'm a huge Frog Hats. I love me the Frog Hats.
Uh-huh.
And so I brought a Fog Hat record.
All right. I was thinking you were talking Golden Earring for so long. We're going to hear Golden Earring.
No, okay. But, I mean, you think about the Frog Hats. I mean, their albums, they put out a lot of records, toured constantly, relentlessly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every one of their records up until like their 13th one, well after like three records after Rod Price had quit, their slide player, every fucking one of them hit charted in America. Every single one of them.
Hmm.
And so, but it automatically, you Fog Hat. Oh, Slow Ride.
And see, well, there's two that you hear on FM radio. It's playing right now. Just roll down your car window and listen.
Slow Ride? Yeah, yeah.
It's coming out of somebody's car.
But I mean,
on the radio.
You got your Slow Ride, but of course, then, they did When I Was Stone Blue, Rock and Roll Show. Remember Stone Blue?
Oh, God, I haven't heard that in
right?
since the last time you heard 10cc.
That's Fog Hat stuff that you forget about, but those were hits, man. I Just Want to Make Love to You, their version of that classic.
Well, that's
rock
the other
number.
One. Yeah, that's the other one. But right? Fool
for the City.
Yeah.
And remember, third time lucky, first time I was a fool.
Oh, that's a good song.
That's a great song. So, there's life, people, after Slow Ride with Fog Hat. I am such a huge Fog Hat fan. It's mind-numbing to me that people's brains automatically, like, Hocus Pocus, Focus, Fog Hat, Slow Ride.
I think it says more about program directors at radio stations.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yes.
It's like, hello, Foghat has another song besides Slow Ride.
Right. So what I brought tonight is their eighth studio album. Now, they put out a bunch of records, man. Their first album came out in 1972, okay? The Foghat self-titled went to 127 on the charts. Debut album, a band from England relocated into upstate New York.
Hmm.
Not bad for first time out. Second album, Rock and Roll, with Stone and the Biscuit on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
Went to number 67, right?
All right.
Energized.
That's
a starting point right there.
That's a start here record.
Yep. That went to number 34. Then they had Rock and Roll Outlaws. That stayed up there at number 40. Fool for the City, which had both their hits on it, went to number 23. Then all of a sudden, that was their last... on the heels of Slow Ride, and they're touring relentlessly,
sure,
right? Just touring relentlessly. So on the heels of that, their Night Shift album still went to number 36.
On the Night Shift.
No. I won't let that happen. We won't let that happen. And then their live album, which was their biggest selling album. So they're huge. But most people couldn't name a hit after Slow Ride.
Speaking of that live album, which is good, by the way, but I was at the record store the other day and I saw they've reissued that on vinyl. It's $44.99.
Oh.
You could find that Fog Hat album, that live album, at any Goodwill for a quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, why did you reissue this album if there's any record,
you know,
that didn't need a reissue? There's plenty of copies out there that are fine.
They're figuring there's, you know, they probably, it's a limited release and some guys are going to buy it, man. You know?
I was like, what the hell are you doing? And it was on the wall, like it was the new release. I'm like, what? Is this a joke?
I'm glad I got my old original beat the shit copy, man. Just sitting over there on that shelf going, yeah.
It's like, why don't you just reissue like popping Kenny Rogers' greatest hits while you're putting quarter records out there?
But so, you know, anyway, I just thought that, you know, to me is like Foghat is so big all the way through their, you know, all their records up until 1983 were charted in the U.S. And not a lot of bands can say that, man. Hmm. You know, not a lot of it's and a small label like Bearsville, you know.
Yeah.
So I brought their eighth and their next to the last album that Rod Price played on.
Okay.
I brought Boogie Motel by the Froghats. Oh, shit. Sorry.
I like the cover. I like the name. That's kind of cool.
Dude,
looking.
It's great. The album, the artwork's great. The inner artwork is great. Ryan, you got to check this out.
Let me see this. Yeah.
So
they had
anyway,
some money. They had some money behind them now because they had the hits, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the thing is with Foghat, up until Rod Price left, and his last album was the next one that came out. Now, this album, Boogie Motel, came out in 79. Rod Price's last album that he did with the Froghats was Tight Shoes, came out in 80. And I can say this about every damn one of those records, because I have every damn one of those records, is that if it was the core band, if it was Lonesome Dave, Rod Price, and Roger Earl, right? And that's, you know,
the three guys.
Yep. And then the bass player, you know, they had three main guys that they used for the meat of their careers. But if those three guys were on it, it's a fucking Foghat record. Like it's a – who's on the – what's the AC/DC record sound like? Like a fucking AC/DC record, right? And when you get these Foghat records, man, you know you're going to get a Foghat record. There's going to be one – Barn Burner in there. There's going to be one Chateau Lafitte 59 Boogie in there. There's going to be one slow bluesy ballad, and it's going to be great, man. So I brought the Boogie Motel record. Like I said, Bearsville Records came out September 21st, 1979. And this is a song called Nervous Release. Now, you know this is going to kick some motherfucking ass, man.
All right.
It's written by Lonesome Dave and produced by Foghat and Tony Oteda. But this deal, now this contains everything that makes a a Foghat record. This ripping, just faster than fuck, just driving beat like a train, freight train out of control at God knows how many hundred miles an hour. It's got actually a Roger Earl drum solo in it, which, come on, two horns up for
wow,
that.
Wow, that's pretty
right?
rare.
Roger, and playing two bass drums, old double bass in that motherfucker, too. So, and then it's got, you know, Rod Price doing his just ridiculous slide. And it's got the absolutely must-have in any great Foghat song, the thing where Lonesome Dave is playing a solo and going, and singing the notes that he's playing, like the solo duo with his voice, right? That's in this motherfucker. This
like
has got
George
it.
Benson?
This has got it all, man. This is a real Froghat record, man. I mean, it's chock full of Foghat, man. This one is. Now, their bass players, they only had really three bass players in the meat of their career. That was, the first one was Tony Stevens, played from the first album through Rock and Roll Outlaws through 1974. Then Nick Jameson, who was, I think we talked about him in another episode, was their producer, and he kind of filled in on the Fool for the City album, ironically. The departure of Tony Stevens, and then they got Craig McGregor in there, who pretty much finished out their career before they disbanded in like 83. I think they got back together in 94 or something.
A couple of them did.
Yeah, Roger Earl. But man, dude, you know what? Fuckers have been touring. They're still on the road. They're on the road right now. So that band.
Now, which guy is left in it?
The drummer. Yeah, Lonesome Dave.
That's not Foghat anymore.
Right, exactly. See, that's why there's truth. That's why, you know.
Yeah, at some point it's not Foghat anymore.
It stopped being Foghat after Tight Shoes, which was their 1980 album. That was the last one that Rod Price played the lead and slide on. And, it was, I think, my least favorite of all of them. But they were kind of trying to get 80s sounding, but still be Foghat. But it was still Foghat. And I, I like the record. I would not recommend not buying it because of that. I would definitely
– You would not recommend not buying it.
So I would recommend buying it.
Yeah. Right as usual.
Right.
Thank you.
But, I mean, you know, it's worth getting every last one of all the Rod Price era Foghat albums when the main three guys, you know, Roger Earl, Rod Price, and Lonesome Dave were in the band. But I don't know, Ryan. Let's just – we could chat more about this, but I say let's just get this shit on, man. And I'm telling you something, strap in for Nervous Release. It's side two, track three from the Boogie Motel album by the Froghats.
Pushing your number on my telephone.
right? That song kills, right?
Yeah, oh, my goodness.
But yeah, we were talking about that fade, man. They're doing that. They just work their asses off for 6 minutes, you know, kicking your ass with their fog hats, and and they do this big rock ending. But they're holding the note out, and it just fades. And it's like, oh, I want to hear the end of it, you know?
How dare you?
Right.
It doesn't save any time off the record to fade it because you still hear the last little sting.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
And they just kicked your ass, and then you want that big KO at the end.
Weird.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. That's the one part of that. I just listened to that and I went, wow, this is a bit bizarre. A strange thing to do. But nonetheless, a great Foghat song. Now, that is typical Foghat. You got all the shit in one Foghat song. You got the Lonesome Dave singing with the solo thing. You got the drum solo. You got, you know, Craig McGregor just laying down that funky
bass. That
bass
cool was
bass.
Really cooking yeah. on that. Wow.
So, yay. Foghat, man. That was from the 1979 Boogie Motel record.
Bougie.
Yeah, man. That was Nervous Release.
Good song.
Yeah, I like that, man.
All right, AD. Moving on to my next pick here. Staying in the UK.
Okay.
This Foghat. We've got so far three English bands.
That was all the Foghat songs in one.
Felt like three.
That was more than three.
So, yeah, this time it's a band that's no stranger to the Shabby Road Record Show. Been in here a couple, three or four times. And I'm going to play a song that they did, which was their first one to ever crack the charts in the UK. I believe it hit somewhere in the 20s, maybe 21 was where it landed. And it landed them on Top of the Pops, which was pretty rare for a prog rock band to be on Top of the Pops.
Oh, okay then.
And the band
must be Genesis.
Is Genesis.
Oh, okay.
Selling England by the Pound.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to hear their single, I Know What I Like, In Your Wardrobe. Yeah, great song. Now, this follows up Foxtrot, which would make it their fourth. Really, I mean, I kind of look at it as being their fourth record in a way. I know it's not because they had the Genesis to Revelation record, but that was such a different sound and a different thing and a different record label, I believe, as well.
Yeah.
But once they started with Trespass and then Nursery Crime and then Foxtrot, that's a triumvirate of great Peter Gabriel-led Genesis.
God almighty, right?
And then they do the live record, the single live
Genesis
record.
Genesis Live, yeah.
Which should have been a double, but it's a single.
Yeah.
And then they do Selling England by the Pound. And what's going on in the band is they're coming off the tour for Foxtrot, which was their breakthrough record. They've now kind of really starting to gain some momentum in not only the UK, but they finally go over to the US for their first little tour as well. Now
they did Don Kirshner's rock concert or something. They did one of the concert shows.
Did they?
Concert or something. I
in the US?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I got to look for that footage then.
Yeah, they did part of Supper's Ready. They did A Flower. Willow Farm portion of that.
You know that now that you mention it, I think I've seen something like that. It's either ABC in concert or
yeah,
it's one of those two
American rock shows.
Because he's got the big flower on his head, right, or something.
Yeah, I was just like, wow,
they doing?
I need more of that.
Now, of course, Foxtrot is such a brilliant record. I think to me, that's the start here record for Genesis.
I'd go with you there.
Foxtrot. Yeah.
I would probably even go live album.
That's where I started, so I guess I can't argue. I got no argument because you can always throw it back in my face and go, that's the first one I told you to get. And you got it and you like them.
I don't think anybody's going to come back and go, that Foxtrot was bloody awful. I don't think.
Have you noticed in talking to fans of Genesis that there is a very, very big split sometimes between the Peter Gabriel years and the Phil Collins years?
Oh, God, yes.
Isn't that weird? Like, most people do not make that leap across that canyon.
I didn't.
You didn't make it that way, and a lot of people don't make it the other way.
Right.
So they don't get over that hump either, going from Phil Collins to Peter Gabriel.
Yeah.
I can kind of listen to a little bit of the Phil Collins stuff, but I'm more interested in the Peter Gabriel stuff. I think it's way more creative and ambitious.
Oh, especially for the time, too, you know,
right.
when it was and the theatrics of it all. And it was, you know, yeah, I mean, I think ambitious is a great word for it. You know, and listen, I can't sweep with a broad brush and go, I don't like any of the Phil Collins Genesis. That's kind of stupid. He's got some good tracks, you know.
And Broad Brush was the name of one of your films, I believe.
Yes. Well, broad. Bring in the broads. And the paint.
So, of course, the record label after Foxtrot, which is, you know, I would imagine that's pretty laborious to get through such a big record. There's a lot of moving parts on that record. And that is something that you should probably, when you finish that record, take about a year off and go to the beach and just go, whew, I can't believe that's a lot of parts.
They didn't have the luxury of Pro Tools.
No, they didn't. No, you know, they had to knock out a 22-minute song.
Some young kid right now is going, fuck, I could do that in my basement. It's like, yeah, I'm sure you could.
But it wouldn't be as cool as Foxy.
Yep.
Wouldn't have the as cool of art, album art on it. But they so they toured the U.S. and so then Charisma, which is their label, they won a record right away. I said, all right, that's great. You guys are really going. So come on. We need another record. And so they – okay. So it's not the type of thing where they could write a lot on the road. So they slot these 3 months to write – the new record. And in the time, Phil Collins goes off and joins like a side project just to kind of get away from the grind of Genesis.
Yeah.
And Mike Rutherford starts working with the old guitar player from Genesis and shit like that's going on. And so they finally like rushed it all together in a sense. But they turned in a pretty solid record. I don't think it's anywhere near as cool as Foxtrot, in my opinion. But there are some really high highlights in the Genesis catalog found on this record, to the one I'm playing, I Know What I Like.
Yeah.
And Firth of Fifth.
Firth of Fifth is cool.
Actually, that's a great, that's one of the
at
best.
Night is good too.
That's true. Yeah. The first three, it starts off strong.
I think so. Yeah.
And then it just sort of, side two is just, the first side of a Genesis record that made me go, it's not grabbing me, you know, I just couldn't get into it. But, The Peter Gabriel came up with the album title, Selling England by the Pound, and it was taken from the UK Labour Party's manifesto, which Shabby Road needs a manifesto to make it official.
Is that like a short little sidekick?
Mitch, please.
A short partying
like this
very festive
this yeah,
festive
like
manifesto. We totally need that. Short sidekick guy.
Like 2 foot.
Yeah, about two
something.
Foot. But he's very festive. He's like
he's
jesters.
He is the party. Yeah.
Manifesto. Oh, we've really reached a new low here. And the reason why he chose that particular title is that, you know, they'd gone to America and they'd come back and he didn't want the England's people to think, oh, they sold out to Americans. Yeah. Remember what happened to Def Leppard, you know, because Def Leppard did that. They went to America and toured for a long time, came back, and they were met with, like, arms crossed going,
yeah.
What, you think you're an American now?
Yeah.
You know, type of thing.
That money's no good here.
So there's that sort of thing where, you know, and Americans are the same way. We're very sort of possessive in a way. You know, everybody's like that about your favorite band. When they start moving on to other things, you fear that they're going to lose sound that they had, and you become like very, no, I don't like you anymore because you did this. And,
I'm pretty particular about that kind of thing.
You know who else is particular about that kind of thing? Robert Christgau, the dean of American rock critics, who is not a fan of Genesis at all.
Really?
Read it.
He's not, but he did like this one. In
this Bob Christgau kind of
in
way.
His, Bob. All right, here we go. Quote, I'm impressed that on half of this Peter Gabriel makes the idea work. His mock-mythologized gangland epic and menacing ocean pastoral have a complexity of tone that is pretty rare in any kind of art. Even more amazing, given past performances, organist Tony Banks defines music to match, schlocky and graceful and dignified all at once. When he's got it going, which is nowhere near often enough. As for the rest, it sounds as snooty as usual.
Wow.
B.
B. I was going to say B minus.
A solid B.
So I gave it a B. That's gave unbelievable. It a B.
Chris,
what a freak. So,
and again, yeah, they wound up on Top of the Pops on this, which is very strange and rare, but this song hit number 21 in the UK charts and put them on the map, or at least I can't imagine what their very underground fan base thought of them on Top of the Pops. That must have been very odd. And this album, though, is very highly regarded in the Peter Gabriel Genesis canon, right? This is a big album, as on par with Foxtrot in most circles, but not ours, I don't think. I think Foxtrot takes it.
Oh, God, yeah.
They would do one more with Gabriel, which is Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, which is bigger in America, but not as big in the UK, because that's a very American record.
Yeah.
In theme.
That's another double record that could have been a great single record, I think.
If they'd have, yes, God, take There's away that so second those, disc all
right?
the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for the first song on the second disc of Lamb.
For the most part, disc one is good. Yeah, they could have borrowed a couple, brought it maybe, you know, but.
It was, obviously the writing is on the wall. And, you know, they're squabbling too, even during this album right here. What happened was, I think that instrumental on side two, which is Steve Hackett's moment to shine on the record, although he really his moment to shine is the guitar solo in Firth of Fifth on the other side of the record. Yeah. But he has, he always does his horizons, you know, like from Foxtrot, right, where it's an acoustic thing.
Yeah.
It got shortened. And the reason why it got shortened is because the last song, The Cinema Show, Tony Banks and Mike Rutherford got into an argument on which part should be kept and which part should stay. And so they just could not come to an agreement, so they kept the whole thing, thus shortening this previous track.
Oh,
Steve Hackett's like, I think I'm going to be out of this band sooer rather than later.
Yeah, look at how did that happen?
Yeah,
just going,
and he would Gabriel would do one more. Steve Hackett, I think, did just two more or three more. I can't remember.
It was with
Wind and Weather. Wind and Weathering.
Yeah, he did one because then
I don't know.
One of their, I think their third album as with Peter with. Phil Collins was, and then there were three, right? That's when.
Yeah, and then there were three would have been Steve Hackett out.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gone at that point.
And Banks and Rutherford.
Right, and that's the genesis that most people know.
Right, right, yeah.
Well, check this out. This has got a great hook, one of the strongest hooks in Genesis history, I think, to me. This is just a great chorus. I mean, it's put your lighters in the air or wave your arms in the air like you just don't care.
It's your birthday. Yeah. It's your birthday.
It's a big chorus and a great song. It's about a if you look at the cover, AD.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a painting. I don't remember the artist's name, but the painting depicts a man who's laying on a park bench sleeping. And behind him are all these people gathered in a lawn area with trees and everything. Peter Gabriel was inspired by this painting and wrote this song about the dude sleeping on the bench, who is apparently the guy that mows the lawn there. And he's perfectly content with his life the way it is, where he mows his yards that he's in charge of, you know, he has to take care of that landscaping and everything. Then he goes back to his bench and just goes and lives his mundane life. And he's completely happy with that. I know what I like. And despite the people in the lyric telling him, you know, if you would just go into the city, you can get a job doing this, this, and this. And he's like, nope, I know what I like. I like, this is fine.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff in the, on the cover. If you listen to the words and look at the cover, you can see the characters kind of develop. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
There's on that
liquor bottle underneath the bench. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just stuff, a cup, a coffee cup.
Right.
You know, his stuff.
Right. And cool. He's like, and he says, like, I can hear you talking while he's laying there.
Yeah.
He's maybe not asleep, you know, he
could
hear, there's a bunch of ladies and things behind him in the yard. So he can, there's always been Ethel. There's always this, that, and I can hear you all talking. Keep those lawn blades sharp. All right. So let's drop the needle on this, on this great song from Genesis. Selling England by the Pound for my Merry Old England Mystery Box tonight on Charisma Records, 1973. Drop that needle, A.D. Adams.
I will do that.
for lunch. Om-da-dum-de-dum. When the sun beats down and I lie on the bench, I can always hear them talk.
There's always been Ethel. She could wake up, we got a tiny room now. And then Mr. Lewis. Isn't it time that he was out on his own? Over the garden wall, two little lovers could go to you. Keep them mowing, they shot.
I'm just a lawnmower. You can tell me by the way I walk.
Oh, yeah. Love that tune. I just love
great.
That chorus.
Classic Genesis, man.
Yeah, yeah. From the Selling England by the Pound.
By the Pound?
Pound. No. It's Pound. I'm trying to get the UK listeners
come
back,
on.
And here we go, huh? I know what I like from Genesis, and I like what to hear what AD has next.
I like Little Baby Ducks. What's that song?
And trucks.
And trucks.
Whiskey in a glass and grass. Tom T. Hall. That may just find its way into the Savvy Road Record show at some point.
It has to, man. Yeah. We should have an episode called Bad Shabby. And just bring in like really like.
Some may argue that every episode is that.
That's true. Yeah. We've gone nowhere. We've gone in a circle, haven't we? All right. Well, listen.
Shut the fuck up.
Ryan, I'm going to pull this. I'm going to pull this album out. And I don't know if you know these guys or not. They were huge. Okay. And well, it's a Canadian band. They were formed in 1973, right? And they They were huge. They put out, I think, 5 records under this name.
Is that Trooper or Moxie?
No. Do you know who that is? Max Webster? Have you ever heard of Max Webster?
I've heard it, but I don't know it.
This should be album cover of the year, by the way.
That is...
disturbing.
I don't know what is happening. Okay, let me describe what's... Oh, my God. We have a man who's balding.
Yep.
Holding a Stratocaster that one could tell even if he's holding it towards you, like the headstock is pointing towards me.
Right.
If he swung it around and played it in a proper manner, it would be way too high. You know, it'd be up in the kind of corny, I'm not a rock and roller thing. He is wearing a yellow...
Unitard. Right?
That...
I'm standing up.
It doesn't appear to have only... It doesn't have a strap on the left shoulder, only the right shoulder. This unitard is very revealing. He is Catholic. I could tell. <And, laughs> he's got a white boots on. And
like ankle-high boots.
His right arm is in the air holding his pick, which is on fire. And he is doing sort of a scissor kick. And, yeah, I guess that's about as much information. Oh, my God, in the back, there's three more pictures of the same fucking
sure
session.
Are, right?
Oh, God. I don't want to hear this.
Well, okay, so we're talking about Max Webster. Now, in Canada, our tropical neighbors to the west, that they were huge there. Their five albums just all got gold records certified.
Max Webster is a man or a
Max
band?
Max Webster is the band, kind of an Alice Cooper thing now. Max Webster is a guy basically Kim Mitchell. And he's
okay.
You know, and that's who you're looking at on the cover. That's Kim Mitchell.
Okay.
The leader, the founder. He's from Ontario. And he's the main guy. So he started the thing. He's won like the Juno Awards, right? Three Juno Awards which is the Canadian
Grammy.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well,
hey.
It's like, yeah, it's a big deal up there, let me tell you. So.
Yeah, Hal.
Yeah.
You were made in China, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, he's never been to Canada. But this is their it's usually a trio with sort of a guest keyboard player. So they're usually billed as a three-piece band, but they always have a keyboard player in there, you know, generally filling in space and stuff. I'm going to play a little song called Battle Scar. Now, I don't know if you've heard of this song or not.
I don't believe so, but maybe when you play it, I might recognize it.
This song is sort of what inspired Spinal Tap to do Big Bottom.
Really?
Yeah. Now, Kim Mitchell was friends with the guys, you know, Canadian superstars, Rush. They were buds.
All right.
They hung out. So they're, you know, as a matter of fact, you know that song on Caress of Steel, I Think I'm Going Bald? Right?
Yes.
That's about Kim Getty or whoever's writing the freaking songs.
Neil
Peart. That was a poke in the ribs at their buddy.
Well, he is
Kim
going
Mitchell.
Bald.
Well, sure he is.
He is going bald.
So that's you know, that's kind of a cool. That's like kind of an inside joke. I think that's kind of cool. Cheesy
he looks
song,
a little, with the hairline and his facial features, he looks a little like the guitar player for the Scorpions. Not Rudolph, but Matthias.
Right, yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. But so, I mean, yeah, how about that album cover?
That's
but
an
also,
abomination.
Also a big part of Max Webster is the lyricist. Now, Kim Mitchell wrote, you know, all the music, but this guy, P-Y-E, Pai Dubois, was the lyricist from the beginning, much like how Rush structures their thing. You know, these guys write the music, one guy writes the lyrics. So
okay.
He's not listed as a member of the band, but he's listed on all the album. You know, as sort of part of the band, you know.
Okay.
But this was produced by Jack Richardson. This came out in 1980. Now, it's weird. No more – I couldn't find a specific date or even month on it, but it did come out – it had to have been late 80 because the song that I'm going to play, it was recorded in June of that year. And what this is their buddies in Rush – all three members came into the studio, set up in the studio, and all the members of Max Webster set up in the studio and recorded this song live. Now, here's the deal. Split in vocals, so there's two lead vocalists, you know, Kim Mitchell and then Geddy Lee. Yep. There's two guitar players because it's both guitar players. That's kind of normal, right?
Uh-huh.
Then there's two drummers playing on this song. Yeah. It's Neil Peart and the other guy that's with Max Webster, right? And so, and there's, you guessed it,
two bass players.
Two fucking bass players. So this is where the Spinal Tap guys go, oh, this is rich. And of course, Spinal Tap did it, what, 3 years later or 4 years later? When
2 years later. I think that movie's 82, isn't it?
I thought it was 84. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, I don't know. Listeners,
anyway, but yeah.
Facebook page and all that.
Check that for us because we ain't got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Oh, so yeah. Why interrupt the good story with fact? But Spinal Tap, of course, had three bass players. So that's just kind of cool, man. That was the inspiration for that. But this song is just cool. It's heavy and it's dirgy and it's at a certain point it's mayhem because there's two bass players. One's going boom boom, 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 the other's going boo doo boo doo boo doo boo boo. You know, doing
oh
all.
No.
And then you know, and then one got drummers going boom chicka da chicka, and you hear the boom 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 boom. Yeah, going over top with this big ass fill, and it's really cool.
It's like a battle of the bands.
It's pretty fucking cool. If you imagine just a bunch of chuckleheads who are buddies going, dude, you know what we should do? We should get in the studio and just jam, all of us. Yeah,
set it all up.
Yeah, come on. So anyway, they did that, and this was a kind of a regional. What was a big hit in Canada, but up in the northern region of the United States, like
Detroit,
or like border states with Canada, like Maine and Vermont and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we were up in that region during that, like the late 1980. And, you know, we'd go into a club and it'd be on the jukebox or, you know, somebody be playing it, you know. And,
really?
And it'd be on the local radio stations in Buffalo.
And this was the single
upstate New York.
From the record.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So it's pretty cool. It's just, it's weird. The lyrics, I could never figure out the lyrics until I finally bought the album. But it says, bust the busters, feed the feeders, make the healers feel the way I feel. And I'm like, wow, it's cool lyrics, you know, because I could never quite make out what they were saying. But it's really about, if you read the lyrics and to what they're saying, it's about the sort of the French movement when they first arrived and how they pushed, you know, the natives out. It's that typical old, like they're going, ah, you fuckers, you know. But it's about the land grabbers and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. This one is. This came out on Anthem Records in Canada and Mercury.
That would be Rush's label, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Anthem Records and Mercury, yeah.
Just good call on that. This is called Battle Scar off the Universal Juveniles, Max Webster's last record. Dude, this is a great record. It's really cool.
That cover.
It's a little off-putting.
I don't want that in my collection.
But you know what, dude? I'm telling you, you should borrow this album. You don't have to take the cover home. I'll put it in a brown paper bag for you.
I'll put it in my Genesis sleeve.
Yeah, put it somewhere, incognito. But no, dude, they range in sound. I mean, they're a heavy band. They're fun. You know, they're very very melodic, but I wouldn't say in a poppy way, but in a very rock and roll way. But, I mean, sort of a pre- Y&T type of vibe to them at times.
I like me some Y&T.
They'll go into some Secret Treaty style Blue Oyster Cult.
All right.
They'll get into some heavier Rush style stuff, you know, like the early, you know, 2112 type.
The three-piece band is primarily this Kim Mitchell doing all the guitars and singing as well.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, I really think you'd like this record, man.
What's the origin of the name Max Webster? Is that a famous person in Canada? Or
I don't know. I don't know what Max Webster is. I didn't get that far.
That's a very odd name.
I couldn't get past the cover. I just kept
staring at his bulge.
I've got research to do, and I just can't.
I can't concentrate on this yellow bulge.
I can tell
he's blind, motherfucker!
So anyway, oh, I'm sorry, Ryan. That's going to be side one, track five. This one's Battle Scar. Good song, dude. But it's really cool knowing that these chuckleheads are just all pounding their in the studio and have fun with this.
Thank you.
That was fun.
What do they got to say about that?
I really enjoyed that.
And they, you know what? They didn't fade that ending out, did they?
No, they didn't. Man, if ever there was an ending that required one.
That was epic. But that was Max Webster and Rush together. That was recorded live in the studio, by the way.
Yes.
You know, but the rest of Max Webster, I've been talking about Kim Mitchell a lot. I got to mention Gary McCracken on drums, who ended up playing with Triumph. And do you remember Klaatu?
Yeah, I got all three of their records.
Yeah, then you've heard Gary McCracken play drums before.
Oh, he's the drummer from Klaatu?
Uh-huh.
Those records are pretty cool.
Yep, and also Dave Miles is on bass, you know, just to round out. You got to
give
props. He's
trading licks with Getty on that.
Yeah, how cool is that?
You know, it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I actually kind of dug the song, and there's a lot of spirit in that record. You could tell it was live,
yeah.
And they were all looking at each other and smiling.
Yeah,
that's the vibe I got from listening to it. It's some things like that really translate well.
It's actually live because you can feel the energy. I don't think there was a lot. They might have overdubbed this or that, you know, for aesthetics' sake or whatever, for mistakes or what happened.
Yeah.
But it feels live and it's fun. But, dude, the rest of that record is kind of more upbeat. So that's the dirgiest thing on the record. I think you would like this record.
Yeah, I may check it out.
But we were talking about...
Yes, let's set this up real quick because I think everybody can relate to the story that AD's going to tell.
Well, I think you started the whole thing by talking about it. I'd like to own this record, but I'd have trouble putting it up on the counter saying, I want to buy this.
Right. I was digging the record. I can't imagine me plopping that down on the counter in front of my local hipster
right.
record store guy and going, I would like to purchase this Max Webster for $8, please.
Yeah, some snarky little 21-year-old goth kids looking at you like you're just Satan incarnate.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah. But the trick is, you know, you don't – like, because if you went in there – like I've gone in a record store and I'm just I just need to fill my whatever band collection, you know. So you go in and go, I know they have – the one record I need. I didn't get it last time, so I'm going to just go finish my
Bee Gees
collection, right? You go in and buy that one record. You don't go in and buy Max Webster by itself because of the album cover.
Yeah, you can't just go in and buy this album. This album cover is just wow. And if you plop that down all by itself, it's just like, well, here's this and I want this.
You came in for that only? And then you have to explain, well, no, but that's all you put on the counter. So when I bought it, I'd gone record shopping and I was crate digging one day and found a bunch of stuff. And some were, you know, a little bit more expensive. So there's going to be less records because I got a budget I got to work within, mm-hmm. you know. But I found that Max Webster record. You don't see it every day, especially down in Arizona.
I don't want to see it every day.
But up in Canada and up in the, you know, northeastern, you know, New England region, I could see it being there. But I'm going, wow, fucking Max Webster. So, and it was cheap, you know. And I'm like, well, I got to have this record. But I only had like three other records and I'm going, oh, geez, really? So I put the expensive ones back and just got a bunch of cheaper ones that I needed. So there were more of them I could put it like fifth or sixth in the pile. So
it
like
a jewel in the rough.
Yeah. The guy at the counter's going, okay, cool record, cool record, cool record. And I've already got points. So then when he goes through the Max Webster and goes, what?
Well, he's got other cool stuff.
Yeah,
now the hipster behind the counter is thinking, well, maybe this is actually a cool record, or maybe he's buying it ironically.
Uh-huh.
This guy's hip because he's got all this other cool shit.
Yeah, the record store boomerang. That's what that is.
So,
and you still get your Max Webster records.
Have you done that, listeners? If you have, hit us up on our Facebook page because I have done that.
I did when I bought the Max Webster fucking
records. There's definitely some shit that I got that I was like, I need to pad this.
Yeah, right.
I need to temper it.
Well, that was great. How fun was that song?
That was really cool, man. I love that.
I would suggest you take the record. Oh, we're leaving on tour, so never mind.
Yeah, I can't do anything because we're leaving again.
Yeah,
I will definitely, when we come back in a couple weeks, I'll be scooping up your Max Webster.
You won't buy it. You just keep borrowing mine.
Yeah, I won't buy it. I don't want to own it.
It'll be like a custody thing. Right. We had it last week, dude. Well, why don't you buy it?
I thought we said I'd have the Max Webster record on Easter this year.
Why don't you just buy one yourself? No.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
No.
Give me one in a brown paper sack, maybe. So, all right, continuing on with my mystery box here and celebrating all the great music to come out of England. And this band is certainly one of our favorites. And their story begins. It's really a tale of two Mercy Beat type bands, you know. And these two bands sort of got together in Herefordshire, England.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Solents from the Ross on Wye area. I hope I'm saying that right.
Of course, love, of course.
And the Buddies from Hereford. And the guitarist from the Solents switched to bass and joined up with the guitarist and singer from the Buddies to form a group called the Doc Thomas Group. And they landed a gig in Italy playing at like this. It's a resort town. And so they must have been playing like casinos or something
that. Be a twist because in England they call their penis the John Thomas. Oh, it was on the tip of me, John Thomas.
Oh, really?
I wonder if Doc Thomas
Doc is Thomas
sort of
Group.
Their way of getting away with that.
So, like, Jeff Beck Group was probably out, and they're like, Doc Thomas Group.
Yeah.
Interesting. I had no idea who Doc Thomas was or Max Webster was.
Right.
But that's a good point. Maybe it is. England, if you're out there.
Help us.
There's
got
to be. I know there's at least six of you. So they landed this gig in Italy, and it must be a fairly high-profile gig. Because they ended up landing an Italian recording contract, and they did one self-titled album in 1967 under the Doc Thomas Group.
Now it sounds dirty.
Yes. Now it's suddenly, yeah, thanks a lot for that.
That's right.
The members of the Doc Thomas Group, and the members are Mick Ralphs.
And the members.
The members.
All right, I'm sorry.
The members are Mick Ralphs, Overend Watts, and Stan Tippin.
Well.
Found themselves in need of a new drummer. And so in 1968, they got Dale Buffin Griffin and added an organist called Verdon Allen.
Oh, they sure did.
And they started playing in England as the Shakedown Sound. And they later changed their name to Silence. And they cut a demo tape and sent it out to EMI, Apple, Polydor. But no one at all was interested. However, one guy named Guy Stevens from Island Records loved them, except for the singer, Stan. He's like, I love the energy and you guys are great.
But that guy.
But that singer guy, I'm not really digging him. So Stan, you know, I'm not feeling Stan.
And Stan graciously.
Yes. And so they took an ad out looking for a new singer. Enter Ian Hunter, who was older than the young dudes in Silence. And Stan, actually, like you said, go ahead and tell the story about Stan Tippin.
I believe he ended up being their road manager.
He did, yeah. Instead of like just quitting and going, well, screw you guys, man. You're going to let me go.
Still touring with the band, banging buds.
Yeah, he's like, well, fuck it. I'm still in a rock and roll band.
Yep. Who's
and,
that?
Of course, we're speaking of Mott the Hoople.
Of course we are. Dude,
and I brought the first record.
Yes, you did.
So it was a good time to talk about the history of Mott the Hoople. And so, yeah, that's their history. Stan takes on the role of road manager. Ian Hunter is now in the band. Now, Guy Stevens is the dude that's responsible for getting all this happening. He wasn't keen on the name of the Silence band name, and he suggested Mott the Hoople from a book that he had read while in jail for a drug bust of the same name. And Silence reluctantly agreed, and they hit the studio to record the album under the name Mott the Hoople, which took 1 week to record. And Ian Hunter had not even played a gig with them yet. And they're like, all right, we're in the studio, and we're going to make an album.
Let's go do that.
And they've never done any kind of gigs before at all. And the album actually did pretty well. It was hitting the charts in the UK and bubbling under in the US, actually, at 185 on the album charts, which is... Again, you talk about a new band.
Yep.
Here's one from England. This hits 185 in the U.S. I'm not sure where it wound up in the U.K. But, you know, they started to make some noise in and around the club circuit there in London. And their next album was Mad Shadows, which was heavier and darker.
Right.
It didn't do as well. Their next album, Wildlife, which was without Guy Stevens producing... I believe, right? They went a different direction because Mad Shadows was just too dark.
It was out
dark.
There. I'd have to check on that. I think you're right, though. But Guy came back, of course.
Well, the sound of Wildlife is very, almost country western. Like, it's like a very roots kind
yeah,
of thing,
yeah.
right? By the except for maybe Whiskey Women, which is the single,
which is kind of,
and then they tacked on that live keep a rockin' at the end of it, which is very disjointed record. Wildlife, not without highlights. Angel of Eighth Avenue is on there, I think, if I'm not
yeah,
mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, I mean that, but you again, we're in eras. The Mott the Hoople is a band with eras, the
yes,
early
absolutely.
Years, then the big three. Well, you could call it the big four if you include the live record. You know,
okay.
there was the golden years of Mott.
The golden years.
Yes, yes, David. glad to see you're awake, David Coverdale.
It's great to be back, AD.
So did you ever meet Ian Hunter?
Several times, yes. He toured with, who was his guitarist? That fantastic boy's blonde hair with...
Mick Ronson. Right?
Mick Ronson, yes, indeed. That man was an incredible, powerful man.
Heard he was a nice guy.
Couldn't understand a word he said. He's from Hull. He's like a bumpkin.
Yes, bravo.
Very well done, Mr.
Thank
Ryan
you.
McKay.
Thank you.
That was great. We woke David Coverdale up.
He's been sleeping at Chabby
oh,
Road
I
since,
see you're awake, David.
Since episode 48.
Nodding off in the corner.
So Wildlife comes out. I don't know if you were on a trail there, but yeah, Wildlife came out, and it did less than Mad Shadows, which was a disappointment.
Yeah.
And then they did Brain Capers. They were building a live following, but again, Brain Capers didn't give them any hits. I don't know if it sold about the same as Wildlife, but they're treading water.
Yeah.
And they had this horrible gig somewhere, and they said, you know what? The tour's over. Let's just call it a day. And that was that. And there was no more Mott the Hoople until...
The grandfather clock.
A grandfather clock came waltzing in.
It was time.
Don't break up.
Oh, my gosh. David Bowie, you're awake.
That's right.
Yeah, well, listen, so what happened? I mean, Mott was on their last legs and...
I implored them to stay together.
Well, I appreciate that because then what happened was I think you wrote a song for them.
I wrote two songs for them.
Yeah, you did? Okay. Well, one of them was the title track to what I call the first of their big three records.
All the Young Dudes.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Fantastic song. I actually wanted them to record another number I'd written. Suffragette City. Fantastic song about... Shagging fat chicks.
That thing. Shagging slags.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Any other impressions I could do
to further
alienate our English listeners?
They're all British, aren't they?
Yes.
How is that?
So David Bowie comes in and basically saves their career, produces their record, gives them a hit song, and the rest is history.
It is.
Tonight we're going to hear Rock and Roll Queen.
Oh, come
from
on.
From Mott the Hoople.
Yeah.
And you talk about eras for Mott the Hoople. They have the glam rock era, which is obviously our favorite, the big three.
Oh, yeah.
All
yeah.
the Young Dudes, Mott,
and
the Hoople. Those are three different records. They fantastic idea. They're called Mott the Hoople. They have a record called Mott. They follow it up with a record called The Hoople.
And that's another rock and roll truth. When you describe those records to somebody, you have to be careful how you say it.
Right.
So they get it right.
Yes.
Right.
Mott.
Yeah, that's.
And Mott the Hoople.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't say Mott the Hoople, though.
No, right.
You know, the one with, yeah, very it's very challenging. But those records are fantastic. Now, this early period is way more reckless. And it is a band that's just slamming. They're younger and they're
very
heavier.
very bar band sound. You know, I mean, like, it's not polished, it's certainly not refined.
The initial thing that Guy Stevens saw, I think, in them and really pushed them towards is having this group be like the Rolling Stones but the Rolling Stones with Bob Dylan. It's an amalgamation of Bob Dylan and Rolling Stones together. So that swagger with the great lyrics and that sort of poetry kind of thing.
And there's also a Kinks element to it, too, I think. Well, I mean, certainly, obviously, the Dylan reference, yeah, Ian Hunter's voice and Dylan's voice are so similar. But I think that where the Kinks come in is sort of the danger. A fight could break out and probably will type of energy mm-hmm. going on, you know. And that's what I always felt like if you listen to the earlier Mott stuff. Hell, all of the Mott stuff.
Yeah.
Being Hunter. Like,
right, yeah.
Violence might come to mind on
true.
The on the Mott album.
Yeah, and listening to the live record, there's a little bit of that sort of recklessness that appears on these early records. But I think everything is tame on the Mott and the Hoople
right, yeah,
glam rock era.
Controlled and packaged.
Controlled chaos. Whereas this is just chaos.
Yeah,
at the end
yeah,
of this
it
song,
is.
It is just – but it's great. I love
Mott
that
the
shit.
Fucking Hoople, dude.
I love that. I mean, right? They're just Buffins back there crushing.
It's killing
and Mick Ralphs is soloing forever. I'm like, he's in Foghat. He must be auditioning for Foghat here. And then all of a sudden, sort of the chorus creeps back up because he's been soloing so long, yeah. Almost like a cue, like, Mick, we're done. You know, they start hitting the rock and roll queen, you yep. know what I mean. You know, they start hitting that again. This is just a great song. And Ian Hunter, in his mind, at least in the press, in one interview, had mentioned that maybe those Rolling Stones might have heard this song because he feels that the song Bitch, which came out later, because
oh,
remember, this is 1969.
Yes, okay.
Sticky Fingers is what, 71, 70?
Probably, yeah, I think 70.
He 70, thinks that, yeah. He's like, they're very similar in their groove and the fact that they're in A minor, pentatonic kind of riffy things.
Right, I could see that. I wouldn't have thought of that.
I would never have thought of it either, but when I listen to the groove, not necessarily the riff. I mean, there's no way you can go, well, they totally stole it, but
well,
there's certainly
nick it, but yeah. There may right. be shades of it, huh?
Yeah, shades of Ian Hunter. Yes.
Not a bad thing
bitch,
ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's drop the needle, AD. You know where this is. This is on side two, track one from Mott the Hoople's self-titled record on Island Records in 1969.
Before
which,
the Columbia years.
Further, is way before the Columbia years. Not to be confused, they have a record called Mott the Hoople. And they have a record called Mott, and they have a record called The Hoople. Let's
right.
try to muddy the water a little bit more.
Okay.
Drop that needle on Rock and Roll Queen.
Let's go.
Sweet smelling girl.
Where at some point you almost call that proto punk, right? I mean, that's
that was a Donnybrook. That there, actually, there's been a few musical slugfests here tonight.
That was my version of your fog hat song,
right? And then in between, the sort of that slugfest between Rush and Max Webster, where it's like sort of two, you know, old boxers in the 15th round where they're leaning on each other just to stand up and like weak punch, dance, lean,
yeah,
another weak punch, you know, so there've been even the Max Webster one was kind of a, you know, a good old
exactly,
fashioned.
Yeah, wow.
I don't know what.
Yeah, that's Mott the Hoople. They were just rocking.
They were killing it, man.
Those early records do rock. I would recommend this one in Brain Capers, right? Those would be the two to start with for the early stuff. Obviously, you start with all the real glam stuff. I mean,
well, yeah, it's funny you should ask me to like compare records to this record. I was just going to say Mott the Hoople or Bad Company. Come on. Right?
Come on, that's not fair.
It is fair. It's totally fair. You just heard that.
I guess, wow, it's only 5 years between those two records.
Right? What'd that guy do?
Mick Rouse.
Get up every morning and it's just another day. Oh. Pick up my belongings. Right.
You mean that record that sold 4 million copies?
Yeah.
Instead
whatever.
Of 14?
So did Debbie Gibson.
Hey, don't you start
kinda,
on...
I kind of like Debbie
Gibson. Don't you start on Debbie Gibson.
The old Deb Deb, come on.
What would Craig Smith say about that?
He would smack me upside my head.
And you would deserve it. All right, yeah. What you got, man?
All right, listen. It has been
a
Donnybrook.
It's time for the vapors, right? You got that sad song. Oh, no, here we go.
It's been a lot of fighting and fisticuffs here tonight. It's been reckless and wild, and we need some love in the room, man. We need some love in this fucking room, and we need it right now.
Kiss my ass, sugar.
Leave it to Hal to add some levity to everything.
Listen, man, there are so many James Brown classics that we could talk about, okay? And we're talking about way back in the 50s with the famous Flames, right? And then he did a solo thing and then, you know, the JBs come along in the 70s. And then all of a sudden, James ain't doing so good in the late 70s. 80s comes along. Old James found some liquor and cocaine.
He found all the cocaine.
But he also found a big, huge hit in the Rocky IV soundtrack with Living in America, right?
So, yeah.
So, goddamn, you know. But I'm going to tell you something, man. I am such a huge fan. I think you know this. I'm such a huge fan of James Brown. From his early stuff, all his eras. But I found this record, and I found it for so cheap, and I did backflips, man. First of all, you don't see this record a lot.
You don't see a lot of James Brown, really.
It's on the original King label. So it's the authentic
thing. That's my label.
Yes,
that's right.
That's right.
You mean it was on my label, me and Colonel Parker?
It weighs a ton. It weighs like almost a kilo in James Brown terms, right? This thing is a heavy record. It came out in March of 1969. What I have in my hand is James Brown's Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud album. Let me tell you something. Of all the records he did, now this is post-fabulous. I keep doing that. Post-Famous Flames as a solo record. Now this came out in 69. James Brown joins the Famous Flames, I think, in like 1953 or something, right?
Wow, that's a long
This
time
is
ago.
James Brown's 27th fucking album. This
Holy
is 1969.
Hit.
His 27th record. But let me tell you something, man. The band on this record, what strikes me not only about this album is that the players on this record, which are so definitive to his style. Clyde Stubblefield on drums.
Oh.
Right? Oh. I mean, should we start there?
Yeah.
You want to start right there?
Okay.
Then you've got Maceo playing on that.
Maceo Parker!
Right? Yeah, I mean, so this is a who's who. A who's who. He's got Fred Wesley on trombone. He's got Pee Wee Ellis on sax, who basically ended up being his touring band, which one of the greatest fucking bands of all time. And the way this band breathes, and the way this band, we were talking about like the heartbeat earlier. This band is, remember in the old Westerns, you know, and they were filmed inside a studio. So they had, you know, the up close, they had the saloon, or at least the facade of one, and a couple mm-hmm. of cactus props. But the main backdrop, and it makes it look like you're looking out the vast wilderness of Montana.
Yeah.
But it's really just a painted backdrop. So sure. it's perfect, and it's innocuous. It mm-hmm. doesn't take away from John Wayne up front confronting the bad guy, right? It's innocuous. It doesn't move. There's no breeze even blowing the trees. A bird doesn't randomly drive by. So there's nothing drive by.
But it sets a mood.
Right. And it sets it and it stays there, right? You know what uh-huh. I'm saying? That's what this band does. Now, the song I'm going to play, I'm telling you what, is the saddest fucking song I'm not going to say ever written, but ever performed. There is so much angst in James Brown's voice, and this band is pumping and they're breathing and they're just under the radar and they're holding that riff. And right when the fucking chorus comes, boom, there's that band. And he said, "Now bring it down for me." And they bring it down for him and they're right back in that fucking bubble, dude.
Ooh.
James Ooh. Brown doesn't quote unquote sing a note. Now there's a chorus on this, of course. But he doesn't really sing a note. He just says stuff like this. So, Ryan, if I was talking to you, I'm not really singing a melody, am I? No. No, I'm not. I'm just trying to tell you something. It's going to take me a while. Because I got to set it up like Jane Brown would do.
And then Steve Marriott would do later.
Yeah, right? And, dude, so I'm going to play Goodbye, My Love, parts 1 and 2.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with this.
Sadly, I'm not. You know, I know all the big James Brown hits.
Please,
and this...
please, It's a Man's World, all the Lickin' Stick, which is on this record, by the way.
Hot Pants.
Right?
Smoking.
Yeah. And Mother Popcorn.
Hot Pants.
Get up on the good foot.
Smoking.
But, dude, it's all, you know, all the way to this, I think.
Funky President.
Is probably the best James Brown record out there. No, I'm serious, man. You got to listen to this song. And James, he fucked up the relationship, and she left him. And James Brown is so fucking sorry. Mm. And the voice, and dude, he does these rock and roll screams that no one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm about to play.
Well, they're all sampled in so many songs from the 90s,
I'm
right?
about to play Song of the Year.
Oh,
at the Shabby Road
Record
Show.
Very confident
and
here.
I'm going to tell you, I'm feeling this.
I like this confidence.
It
You're
is,
brimming with the Mott the Hoople searing into your veins.
This song gives me freaking literal goosebumps. And you will too. I suggest if you're driving.
Pull over.
Pull the fuck over. Grab yourself a coffee and a cigarette. Even if you don't smoke, you're going to need one after this. I'm telling you, James Brown's story is legendary, you know, from the early days of him being a real hard ass band leader. And, you know, like if you fuck up, he'll fire you on the spot.
Yeah.
Right. But it's funny. A lot of his band members from not only the Famous Flames, but during his solo stuff, like Bootsy and his brother, Bootsy Collins and his brother Catfish, you know, Phelps Collins, they play guitar and bass for James Brown. And ended up playing in the JBs with him in the 70s.
Okay, right? That's that band from the 70s.
But yeah. A lot of those guys also doubled playing in P-Funk in the mid-70s, early mid-70s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A lot of the Maceo went over and did some session stuff, you know, and a lot of those guys, Bootsy and his brother, went over and played in P-Funk. So a lot of the guys who James probably fired ended up playing with P-Funk, you know, which is interesting. It's funny, there's a really cool story about Bootsy and his brother Catfish playing a gig with James Brown in, like, I think early 70s, 71 or something like that. And James had this back then. Now, it's funny, James Brown is known for his, you know, his crazed cocaine and all that. But that came later. He never allegedly didn't touch drugs till like 1980 or something. So he was like, no drugs, no booze, right? So hardcore. Well, Bootsy and his brother were tripping balls on LSD
oh,
at a James Brown show. Now, you know, you can't slouch. You and James, ha ha, and he's going to hit the band. Hit me two times, bomp, bomp. You imagine tripping and hit me two times. You're going...
It'd be like that dude that pitched a no-hitter on acid, remember?
Right? Yeah. hit me one time, and you just go... You know, hit me three times, chunk, chunk, a chunk, And he's just like giggling, like, yeah. I mean, so he fired him after that show. But it's pretty cool. So there's a lot of, you know, James Brown crew has, you know, ties into the, you know, funk thing. And James Brown, I mean, fuck, what, the godfather of soul, right?
Hardest working man in show business.
The hardest working man, the father of funk. I mean, James Brown, as not only a performer, but a writer and a producer, arranger and all that, he was always kind of one step ahead of the fuzz. You know, he kind of created soul, that hard, gut-wrenching soul out mm-hmm. of doo-wop and the sadder crooning stuff in the 50s. And they nailed it with this energy, much like Little Richard approached his rockers. James Brown would take a ballad and just rip you, just beat you with it, you know? And,
I like that.
And
yeah.
It's, you know, it was amazing, and the emotion and the energy comes through. So with that, and then, you know, Motown was doing its thing, but James Brown was doing his thing, and it was harder edged, and it was, you know, more mm-hmm. edgy. So then all of a sudden that dance stuff turned into funk, and he really did create a lot of that.
Right.
He's solely responsible for quite a bit of that. So anyway, let's play, Ryan, without any further ado. This is written by James Brown and, of course, produced by James Brown. This Ooh. Is Goodbye, My Love, parts 1 and 2. And
okay, now, this is an incredible package here.
Thank
this
you.
Record.
Thanks, Ryan.
This record.
Come on. These new pants I just got at Walmart.
You're Catholic, too, I see.
Yes.
The record, can I ask you how much you paid for it? You said you got it at a great price, and
I got it for what, $7.99?
Shitting me! Wow, yeah. Really? Look at this thing; it's mint.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the all original label. It's not a reissue.
Where?
Zia Records.
The place up the street.
Yep.
Our local record store.
Thank God for those kids who just put a sticker on it.
Yeah, it's probably a reissue, right? I mean,
no, that's not.
It's not.
No, okay. It's original.
Wow. Oh no, it's not. Okay, looking at it. All right. Oh.
$7.99. I'll take that. Then I put the Max Webster record back and got it the day after that. Right?
All right. So side one, track 4.
Yeah. All so right. I think it's 3.
According to the label, it's number 4.
Hit try 4.
Right as usual, sir.
I usually write that down. I didn't write that down. I should know that.
You suck.
I do suck, but check it out, man. Listen, sit back, close your eyes. Not only listen to James, but listen to the band in back of him and listen to the way they're allowing him to tell his story. And when he gets emotional, the band rises up with it. This is one of the greatest tracks of music, Ryan, I've ever fucking heard, period.
You know, sometimes a man or a woman makes a mistake. Try to find a reason for making a mistake. But there's no reason to make a mistake. The only thing you can do when you make a mistake is say, I'm sorry. It takes a man or a woman to say, I'm sorry. And takes a fool to walk away. So right here I want to say I'm sorry. I don't know where you are, but you know I need you. Now there's one more thing I'd like to say right here. I could say maybe you just don't understand. I could say baby I believe you got another man. And then I could say, I just can't help myself, but I wouldn't be a man. And then I could say, maybe you don't have nothing left, but I want you to know, I still love you. Goodbye, my love. Thrown me away. Goodbye, my love. That's one more thing
You know, to have somebody to worry when you worry. To feel the need of a real person when your friends drop you behind. To kill your anger just by being nice and kind. I could say if you leave, it wouldn't bother me. But I know that would be a lie. Cause baby, deep down inside, you part of me. That I want you to know, and I don't care who knows, I still love you. Always been in my corner, never let me be a loner. There's one more thing I'd like to say right here. You told me that no one would ever be able to take my place, that every time the feeling was nice and you fall in my embrace, you said everything would be all right. You had no other love, no other person in your sight. You said there would be another. There would never, never, never be another. And I believed you. I believed you. Yes, I believed you. Cause I want you to know I still love you. Goodbye, my love. You're throwing me away. Goodbye, my love. You're throwing me away. You're throwing me away. You walked away from me. Tell me why. You walked away from me. It's one more thing. It's one more thing I got to say right here. It's one more thing I got to say right here. I still love you. By my love, you're throwing me away. You're throwing me away. You're throwing me away.
Woo.
Wow. Right?
What a great band and great performance. Those screams are just
primal.
They really are.
James is really, really sorry, honey. And I wish you'd get back with James immediately if you're out there, because he misses you. He's truly sorry. He made a mistake.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Sounds like it. Bring it down, Jimmy.
You know what, James? Maybe if you didn't whip their asses all the time, you wouldn't be so damn sorry. They wouldn't be leaving your ass all the time, James. Think about that, all right?
Wow. Okay.
He's dead, right?
Yeah, he's dead.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you think about that, James.
I don't think they've buried him yet, though. Oh, right?
Maybe we can get him to call in.
Is he the one that they have him buried and there was all this custody stuff?
Is it,
or is
really?
That B.B. King?
I hope not, because if it goes
I think it happened to James Brown, too, didn't it?
I hope not. Ted Williams' head is in a freezer out here in Phoenix at the Mayo Clinic.
It's here at Chabby.
Right next to David Carter, the slumbering David Carter.
Grab me a beer out of the fridge. Don't mind the head.
Don't mind Ted Williams. Hey, Ted.
Most hits in baseball ever.
He uses top teeth as a bottle opener.
Oh, come on. All right.
We've gone far enough. Come on.
Come on, indeed.
Well, that was James Brown from the Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud album, March 1969 on King Label. James Brown sold a record, Goodbye My Love, parts one and two. Right? Mm-hmm. Bring it down, Jimmy. Fuck, man.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in to episode number 67 of the Shabby Yay. Road Record Show. We appreciate you guys stopping by. And also stopping by our Facebook page and liking us over there and keeping tabs on us and all the crazy posts that we did. I just posted the new David Bowie video. We posted a Hollywood Squares thing with a bunch of rock stars in it. So make sure you
Pete
come.
Pete Way, right?
Pete Way from UFO on
come
Hollywood
on,
Squares.
Right?
Things that you find on the internet.
And Paul Lynde in the center square in a neck brace. Explain that.
But you guys are chiming in and commenting and stuff like that, and it's fun. We always answer you, and we get into some fun dialogue over there. So like us over there on Facebook. And, of course, the iTunes reviews are always appreciated, and the Amazon banner at our website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, with Christmas just around the corner, AD.
Oh, yes.
This is a huge thing.
Hit
man.
That button on the Shabby site, man.
Go to Shabby
Get
Road Record Show.
AmazonGoods.com,
and you just click on that banner. Doesn't cost you a penny.
Not a dime.
Not a dime.
Not a dime.
And you just buy all that Christmas stuff for all your friends and neighbors. Buy that James Brown record. Buy this record by...
Buy this Black Oak Arkansas record. Raunch and Roll Live.
You know you want to.
Yeah, getting kind of cocky.
Let's thank Jimmy Durden on the Astrovan bench seat.
Bring it down, Jimmy.
Did you find those tubes you were looking for? He's still looking for them. And, of course, there's Ricky Serrano running the controls. And he's brought with him the man who's fresh out of anger management, Hal 5000.
You've got nothing!
It did you wonders, Hal. Did you wonders.
Shut up!
And Liz Morgan over there on the bench seat, too, slinging liquor. Throwing it at us, making us drink.
Yep.
No matter what, we say no, but she holds our hair back and throws it down our throats. Okay. Those of us that have hair.
We should put a little sound thing in our Ted Williams hat. It goes, enjoy your beverage.
Why is he British?
I don't know.
He's from Boston.
I should have made him sound more like Ted Kennedy. Enjoy your beverage.
Era. Enjoy your beverage.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm looking across the room, and I see a man who still loves you. And take it down, Jimmy. It's A.D. Adams.
Yes. Well, that's right. You ain't kidding around, and I'm looking across the room right now, and I'm feeling bad. I'm feeling bad. But Ryan McKay, I'm here to say, it's a pretty good show.
Okay.
Ryan McKay sitting across the room from my co-host here.
That was like the Sopranos ending right? just now.
Yeah.
All right, 67's in the books. We'll see you guys on number 68. Thanks for tuning in. See you Woo. Next time.